the dark, I fed my dreams. Permaculture flows like sweet streams. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. Permaculture, P-I-M-P, I'm the king. Back to love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 481 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only pimp cast on this earth that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Well, good to be here with y'all on this Monday. Wow. Man, I can't believe how this whole year is just passing by, man. I can't even believe we're near the end of August and almost to my birthday. And son, don't let me forget, we got to talk about my birthday here in a second, because I'm going to say something that's going to make me look very, very stupid. Anyway, this episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. TPC will get you a 5% off, almost messed up there. Yeah, go check us out. It's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina. We got Barbara O'Neill coming in. Anyway, myredlight.com, BB25 and BB30 will get you, 25, you'll get 25% off any single item and 30% off any bundled item. That's from my former guest, Jonathan Otto. So go over there and check that out, especially on these chemtraily days. You might want to be looking for some options out there, believe me. All right. So let's just jump right into it, son. My birthday is on the 30th.
Yeah.
But I was going around telling everybody I was 55, man. I'm actually 54.
Yeah, Dad. Yeah, it's 2026, Dad. Yeah. You're going to be 55.
I was like, dude, here's how I found out. Here's the dumb part. I had to fill out some application online, and they're asking for the birth date. It was something like that. And then when it said 50, you know, I'm going through looking at the application, and it says age 54. I'm like, what? Man, this thing's all kinds of messed up, man. I go back, I look at, oh yeah, I'm actually 54. I'm telling everybody I'm 55 forever and a day, because honestly, I have extraordinary recall for certain things. Other things I cannot remember if you paid me to. My birthday has always been insignificant to me. I mean, it's just another day on the calendar. Well, honestly, until your mom started making that chocolate cake. Now yeah. I remember my birthday, because she's going to make one, and she's like, half of it, she's going to make it the way I like. And then the other half, she's going to make it the way she likes, which, you know, it's not going to have any nuts on it. It's going to be a German chocolate. And son, you want to tell everybody about this cake?
That German chocolate cake is the best cake in the world. I have never had anything that even comes close to being as good. Yeah. Well, how many different types of chocolate are there from different parts of the world?
I don't even know, man. This cake has got to be $200 to make. I mean, which, you know, good thing birthdays only come around once a year, because she's got to order this stuff, man. I mean, it's like she's up here whipping up something out of Harry Potter, man. She's pulling up, you know, chocolate that came from this part of Africa. And folks, I'm not overselling it. I'm telling you, this is by far the best cake that has ever been made. And, you know,
it's one dude's recipe, chef's Bobby recipe.
Yes. Yeah, Bobby Flay's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Bobby Flay's, recipe. But other people have attempted to make it. And one of the person's son, I won't mention the name, but they were back there in Texas, and you can't buy lousy ingredients and expect to have the same flavor. I don't care what it is. You cannot buy, and I don't care what it is. You can't buy, you know, it sure is funny that this person would spend tons of money on luggage, tons of money on certain things. But when it came to the food they ate, it was best choice, this and that, that and this. I mean, there's some recipes, most recipes, at least in my view, where you can't put in, if it calls for butter, man, don't put in margarine.
I mean, I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. You can't do stuff like that. Anyway, yeah, it turns out I am actually 54. So, yeah, bad on me. All right, I'm going to jump right into the farm news. Okay, I'm out here cooking up some bone sauce. We finally got a – I mean, it rained every day, I want to say, for a month, every single day. And here it is. We got one day where it's not raining, so I'm making more bone sauce. Hopefully I'll have that on the website by tomorrow. But, folks, I don't cut any corners on this stuff. If I don't have it, I know people are blowing us up on the email and everything else, but I'll be completely straight up with you. I don't water it down. I don't do anything. I give it to you exactly as it has to be made. My integrity is on the line for everything that we sell, and I'm not going to water this stuff down, even though, you know, especially in light of everything that's just recently happened, son, like with the avocado oil scandal.
Yeah. If y'all didn't know, Dad is still – if that was emotional damage to Dad – after he found out Siete wasn't using real avocado oil.
I was furious, and I still am, because check this out. The only person of all the people that were called out, the only one to make a statement was Mark Sisson from Primal Kitchen. And if you look at his statement, it basically says, no, we didn't. Okay. I will also point out something, that the ones who did this article didn't provide any evidence. They didn't provide any evidence. So, all they said was, this is what we found, but they didn't provide any results. But you would think this would require a statement from Siete and all the others that were mixed up in it. And you know, son, the only ones that came out and dropped a statement the other day was the CEO of Azure, who I happen to know. I got his phone number. And I couldn't have been more proud of promoting Azure as I was after listening to his statement. And I'm going to hopefully, I was going to do a front porch talk about it, but I got really, really busy. But I really want to put a spotlight on them, because he explains exactly what's going on in the avocado industry and why they don't have avocado potato chips and why they use what they use and why they don't get more of it, because they're well aware of the fact they've already been down this road. They're well aware of the fact that if you push on these suppliers, you're going to wind up getting some junk. So, yeah. That's definitely a big deal out there for me, and I'm gonna do some kind of monologue, maybe even during the week, talking about that very thing, because here it is, the one person that wasn't implicated in it was explaining why it happens, and you know why, and he didn't do it by pushing down the other companies. He didn't do any of that, even though I'd have been completely fine with it, but he didn't do any of that, and he explains how, you know, because of their methods, this is why they're definitely on top of it. So, yeah, I'm not happy about that. Anyway, bone sauce is going to be back in the saddle tomorrow. Okay, since we don't have rain, we had a ton of humidity, even at 3,000 feet here in the mountains, which is absolutely unheard of. Son, it seems they've gone back to not messing with the weather right now. We got as close to blue as you can get up there right now. And at the same time, low humidity. So it's like it was for the first 5 years that we lived here, at least right now. Yeah. So let's hope we get more of it, because that's exactly how it was every single day where we live. Used to be perfect weather every single day. And then all of a sudden they really started messing with the weather, and, you know, it hasn't been that way. Other things, got some apples off the trees today. So folks, this is exactly the reason why you want early, mid, and late of everything. So let's say you had an early frost or a late frost. It doesn't affect you in the same way that it does everybody else. And I'm talking early, mid, late of everything you grow. Apples, peaches, pears, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I'm yanking these apples off the trees. And like I was with the pears, I was telling people, pears actually do have a smell. Not all of them, but some of them. But you're never going to get that from the stuff in the grocery store, ever. Because just like apples, they pick them, you know, if not a year prior, pretty darn close to it. But anyway, I'm yanking apples off this tree. I don't even know what the cultivar is, but it tastes fantastic. People might have known or noticed that I put out a lot more shorts as of late. It's been driving me crazy that I can't do long-form videos, but I'm like, okay, well, what can I do in the meantime? Well, I've been doing a lot of shorts on YouTube, X, and some of the other platforms as well. And boy, they are sticking it to us in the biggest way, man. Like, there's a prime time you can put up certain things, and when it's consequential. And it is blowing my mind how YouTube seems to, every time your mama put up a video at a time where it would be seen, all of a sudden there's some giant technical glitch. Like, there's only a minute of this 10-minute video I just made. There'll be something like that, and then she can't get it up for hours. So they're playing games with us, folks. And the reason why, look, I'm just going to tell you straight. The reason why is they don't want y'all and anybody else in the sound of my voice, or they don't want it going far and wide, because I'm the worst threat in the world to the status quo. Let me explain why. And I'm not being lofty in my opinion of myself. Believe me, I'm never that. Trust me, I know the full extent of my ignorance. What they can't have the general public see is a brown person who's a permaculture farmer who's showing you and everybody else out there that you don't have to be on this system, not to the extent that they want you to be. So I could be a very, very, very powerful voice out there if they would let me be seen, but they can't have that.
Oh, another major thing is that you're not doing the race baiting thing, or, oh, that's racist, or anything like that. So they would be fine with all the other stuff as long as you were doing that at the same time, but you're not. So that's where another issue is.
Absolutely. Because if I fall in line and I do what, you know, the powers that shouldn't be want me to do, yeah, they'll let it go far and wide.
I'll give you an example right now, Dad. Or go ahead first, but I'll give you an example afterwards of that exactly. That Silvanakwa Farm, remember that dude from way back? He went and studied under, what was that? Oh, he studied under Joel Salatin. This was like when we lived in, I think, Texas still. I think that's when it happened, like 2018-ish, somewhere around there, 2017, something like that. But he went to Joel Salatin's farm, learned under Joel Salatin. He's a black dude, by the way. Learned under Joel Salatin. Took what he learned from there, applied it to his own farm that I think, if I remember correctly, inherited it from his wife, right? From his wife's family or something like that. I don't know. It was something along those lines. I could be wrong on that. I could be thinking of somebody else. And then started bashing Joel Salatin about him being A, racist, B, his techniques don't work for people who aren't already like born wealthy and stuff like that. He just completely turned on him, especially whenever Joel was talking about and then I think he got back onto him after the COVID statement that he made. But anyway, he's a black dude. Now he's changed his name since that whole event happened. It's like Blackbird Farms or something like that. And he has skyrocketed. He's the one that he gets on the, if you guys have seen the shorts, he's the one that gets on the camera and he says like, what is it now? In this fake deep voice that it's a fake deep voice. And then he responds to some sort of TikTok or some sort of video or some sort of farming content video as well. He absolutely hates any, it's weird because he absolutely, it seems like he's against the status quo, but then argues the status quo constantly, especially if there's anybody in line with kind of what Joel Salatin is talking about. But he does exactly that. He's like kind of against the status quo, but argues for the status quo at the same time. But he plays the race card heavily all the time. Well, I would say check it out, but I don't really want to support his content or anything like that. But you probably have already seen it because he's up to like a million some subscribers now, all started from going off on Joel Salatin.
If I were to take that role, if I were to sit here and play along, look, there's a whole lot of YouTube channels, and I've been very critical about them, who went from being, you know, showing you how to do, you know, grow this, grow that, into preparedness or buy these five things or you're going to die kind of thing, like the Max and a number of others out there. They made that transition because they knew the numbers favored them. I'm not playing that game. I don't keep up with them. The bottom line is, if you sit here and sell your soul for that kind of stuff, or you sit here and play the race baiting, look, man, I'm not going to play that game. I'd rather be the poorest dirt farmer in all of North Carolina before I wind up playing that game. And it's just simply not going to happen. Or, you know, take blood money like Officer Tatum and some of the other influencers out there. I'm not that guy. Never going to be that guy. And it makes me sick what some of these people have done. Selling their soul to just get more clicks. How about that? All right, some other things. Michelle went out there, had to weed eat the bees, or, you know, the grass down low so the bees can get in and out. And then there's been this thing all day long, man. It hit your mom and I at the same time. I think there's something electronic going on in the sky. I'm not sure what's happening. But, man, it was all we could do just to keep our eyes open midday, like, I don't know, around maybe 12 or so. And it hit both of us at the same time. Couldn't explain it. Folks, they're treating us all like lab rats, and I am truly hoping I am hoping that at some point this country wakes up. Sadly, history proves that everybody's going to be have to be in the throes of starvation before anybody does. When you hit this level of depravity, and that's exactly where we are. So other things, you know, it's that time of year, it's dead summer, but we're still moving the animals every single day because we have to, because of all the moisture and everything. So that's a good thing. You know, there's good and bad to all this stuff. And then finally, I think the numbers of the farmers, cattle farmers who voted for Trump, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but it wouldn't shock me if it was. It was on X that I want to say 95% of all cattle farmers out there voted for Trump. Well, they're singing a different tune right about now. You know, this polecat has betrayed every single body in his base. And for those of you who are thinking I'm some kind of lunatic Democrat, got news for you. I'm a political atheist. They're all, it's a uniparty. It's just one party. So you don't identify with the left or the right. They're all working in it together, especially at the highest levels. Trump has betrayed everybody in his base, and now it's the farmers. And still, there's only a small portion of them that are actually waking up. So, folks, he's not working in the best interest, hasn't been. And I knew this second term. I told y'all before, the second day he got into office, when he gave half a trillion, that's with a T, half a trillion bucks to a bunch of oligarchs to build these data centers and everything else, I told you, you've been sold out. The moment that happened, second day in office, I told you, I told everybody, and I, you know, people unsubscribed, oh, you're a Trump derangement syndrome, the whole nine yards. Look, they're all equally worthless. But anyway, the cattle industry, like we weren't losing enough farmers already, now they're going to be dropping like flies. And I'd like to know where they're getting this meat from, because they didn't call it beef. It was like some kind of, I mean, for all we know, it could be anything, man. It could be, you know, ground up Chinese for all we know. That's honestly how sinister and diabolical these people are. So wouldn't put anything past them. Anyway, let me kick it on over to you, son.
Yeah, it's the Soylent Green food that it turns out it's been fake for a long time. Yeah, around here, the weather's been absolutely crazy. Like, we've had overcast all day, but it's been a weird, like, even haze with, like, the moguls in the sky. We've had that all day today, and it's still 100-some degrees outside, like 100, I think it was 103 again today, even though it was supposed to cool off. We're supposed to get some rain today. That never happened. We're supposed to get it tomorrow. I doubt that'll happen. They don't even know what's happening as far as the weather goes. I've been wondering lately, are they giving the weather people like a heads up whenever they manipulate it all, or are the weather people just as confused as we are about this stuff? I know I was looking at Max Velocity because I usually watch him in the morning to see kind of an idea of what today might look like generally. So typically I watch him, and I was looking in the comments this today of his video, and people were in Texas were talking about, like, people were leaving comments in the chat down below of how hot it was in Texas this year and how, like, unusual the weather has been kind of all over the United States. Everybody's kind of making the remark like, man, the weather is unusual. And I thought about copying and pasting links of the Geoengineering Watch website in the YouTube chat. But I was also thinking like, man, this could be a little too much for them all at once. At least they're asking, or they're at least have some sort of observation. They're at least asking the right questions, maybe just leaving them alone. They'll eventually figure it out if they haven't already figured it out yet. Man, but yeah, the weather's weird, hot all the time. Now, something, I was harvesting comfrey earlier. I was digging up comfrey earlier. And one thing that I noticed that was kind of bizarre, and I don't understand really what's happening, is that the bed in the back, I have a raised bed in the back dedicated to just perennials, which is largely just moringa and comfrey and strawberries in that one bed. And that bed, that soil in there is the best bed on the property. Like, it's already been inoculated. It's already perfect crumb structure. I can dig past the depth of the bed with just my bare hand easily. Really good biology in there and things like that. But the comfrey in there is struggling. Meanwhile, and it's underneath the shade of an elm tree. Meanwhile, the comfrey that I have on the south side of the house up against the brick wall is thriving. The one in the bed is irrigated. The one up against the brick wall is not. And the one up against the brick wall is, it's as if the heat never even affected it. It's as if the heat never even bothered it. It doesn't even wilt in the middle of the day. But the one in the back That one is struggling. I'm wondering, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. That's a mystery that I just discovered today, and it's not making a whole lot of sense. So I'll have to do some more deep diving, and I'll have to do some soil tests and stuff like that to figure out what's happening. I mean, I guess it's possible, because it is in the corner of the property, I guess it's possible somebody dumped something into that bed, but still highly unlikely. And yeah,
I think I think Comfrey always does better in beds that aren't good soil. So I think that might be your chief problem right there.
I didn't think it would be that quick, though. Okay, if that is the case, you're right. That is something that does happen. Comfrey does like crappy soil, whether it's crappy sand soil, crappy clay soil, crappy rocky soil, whatever it is. Comfrey does like crappy soil. And if you start it in like Miracle-Gro, you'll have lower germination rates. Or I'm saying Miracle-Gro, but I mean potting soil. You'll have lower germination rates. I just didn't think that soil would get that good that fast for that to happen. So that's why I didn't chalk it up to that. But maybe that's the case. Maybe that is the case. And then also the Comfrey roots in the back were kind of limp. They weren't like crispy. They were kind of limp. So I wonder what was going on. That could have just been because it was in the middle of the day. What else do I have on here? Yeah, the problem with the Comfrey. And then, I'm about to harvest potatoes as well. So that'll be cool. I got a couple of rows of potatoes out at the demonstration site. And I've got I did an experiment with those protein tubs here at the property. One I did, or here at the house, I did one with the sweet potatoes, and then I did one with regular potatoes. And it's time to pull those potatoes out. It's been time to pull those potatoes out, but I'm going to go ahead and get that done here soon, because now the demonstration site is ready at the same time. Which this year, I got to say, we've grown a lot of food so far this year. And we have only done, like the heavy crops, we've only done tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, and things like that so far. Those have been like the heavier producing ones, like by weight. But we still got sweet potatoes coming up. I got to do the potatoes, the squash, the pumpkins, and the watermelons and stuff like that too. So we produced quite a bit of food this year so far. Kind of passively too, because I've been on the road a long time. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're definitely producing a bunch here. A lot of our perennial stuff is really kicking in as well. Somebody asked a little bit ago in the chat about microgreens. I don't know if I can pull up the question, but they were asking about microgreens, I think, and what I thought about them. Yeah. Can you guys tell me your opinion on microgreens and what is your experience? Well, check this out. I did a video not long ago of putting them in between the beans I was growing. And it's an awesome thing because those beans are going to take 90 days to come around. I don't know why nobody's ever done this before, but, you know, treat the areas in between, because honestly, taking some of the work of John Kemp and some of the others, you get a microgreen seed mix. Look, the biology does not ever want to be bare. So if I didn't do anything out there, I would definitely have a mulch layer, but why not plant microgreens in there where I could start harvesting that within 7 to 10 days, depending on the mix. Pull those out, put them in my salad every day while I'm waiting for the beans to come up. Now, eventually, depending on proximity, the beans are going to shade it out, but not before I'm getting a heck of a harvest out of there. So I've been doing that for a little while now, using microgreens to do the alleys. And folks, I'm here to tell you, that's the way to roll. That way you don't have to buy any lettuce in the store. If microgreens are supercharged just by growing them in an inert medium in your closet, what do you think they're going to be like when they're growing outside, getting the sunlight they should, not the stuff from those bulbs? If they're outside getting the stuff that they should, they're in a medium that is absolutely fantastic for them. And then at the same time, there's this commensal relationship that it has with, you know, with the things on either side of it. Because if you go into your forest, I mean, just look out there. Nobody has a mulch ring out there. Well, they do, but nobody's worried about spacing out there. You can plug a lot of stuff in there and do a whole lot. In fact, Eric Sider came up with this thing where he was taking half of his compost and he was growing worms on one side, well, worms through the whole thing, but using part of his compost container to grow microgreens. They're going to be light years better than anything you could dream of buying at a farmer's market, in the store. Yeah, I am a big fan of that also. Let's see,
there's
here
a bunch of videos. Like if you're looking to make it profitable, there's a bunch of like videos, classes, courses, all that type of stuff on YouTube on how to do a profitable microgreen business. Like a lot of people talk about doing like $500,000 in revenue in just microgreens. Now, that is dependent upon how close you are to a major city. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, you ain't selling those in DeKalb, Texas. I can promise you that.
You know how far I got to drive to sell those? They're going to die on the way there.
Yeah, at least 2.5 hours. So, I mean, you'd have to get to Dallas. But, yeah, other folks are saying, yeah, DJT is telling people data centers are great. Absolutely, he is. That was from Nancy. And then Travis the Vet saying weather apps are always off. Yeah, that's why Dane Wigington reached out to me. They're intentionally off. William suspected this years ago. And he was saying that they were playing games with it because the weather outside did not reflect at all what was saying. And it's been since proven. But anyway, Dane Wigington, and I talked about this, sent me an email, which I didn't get until a week after he sent it. And then it shows up in my inbox all of a sudden, and it was time sensitive, asking me to conduct these tests to find out exactly, you know, with the humidity and everything else, finding out what the real weather was, because they're lying about everything. And yeah, you know, it doesn't even matter what it is, folks. We are an empire of lies right now, and it ain't getting any better. All right. So Nessus Hemp, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Yeah, Andrea says Weatherman Plus is awesome. Yeah, he is. I'll come back to him in a minute because he did something that was extraordinary during Hurricane Helene. I'll come to that in a minute. Nessus Hemp, 10% off. Look, don't buy that gas station garbage or anything else out there, y'all. If you want to get hemp like I do, I use it every single day, especially at night before I'm going to bed. Man, this is CBDA, and this stuff is legit, let me tell you. You want to use this stuff, it's the good stuff. And yeah, it costs a little bit more than that gas station, a lot more than the gas station stuff, but I will pay good money for good product.
The stuff in the gas station is just canola oil that somebody's cousin blew smoke weed or weed smoke on and called it CBD.
That's exactly what it is. Well, anyway, Nessus Hemp, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Also, Micronic Silver. Use that every day, too, in so many different ways. Look, you know, you got nano silver, you got colloidal silver. This Micronic Silver is on another level, way more stable. And it's something you really want to have in your medicine cabinet, especially in these times where everything turns out to be a fraud. This is why I only work with the best. They don't hit me up, folks. I hit them up after I try their products before I ever tell you all about it. Anyway,
get 10% off
with promo code PERMA.
On the note about silver, have you ever tried that the deodorant? The silver deodorant? Have you tried that one yet?
I haven't tried that.
Okay, cool. I was going to ask you about it if you did, but okay.
Yeah, so finally, Soil Saviors. We got a link for that below. Everybody's always asking about it, so there you have it. All right, so let's get into the good news. Blueberry compound linked to memory protection. New review in human trials. Okay, so basically, these anthocyanins that you're going to get in things that are colorful. That's why I eat a lot of colorful food. That's why we grow a lot of, sweet potatoes are great, but why not grow some purple ones along with it? Because you're getting a lot of those anthocyanins in all that stuff. So, you know, everything that you can, eggplant, I don't care what it is, man. I'm trying to eat a kaleidoscope of stuff, which is why we're growing it. And then pumpkins, you know, as it gets later in the year, pumpkins are kind of like apples. They're producing at a time of year when most things aren't. So, and then when you're growing these pumpkins, like, oh my goodness, your mom's growing out here, those Cherokee tans. Man, you ain't, if you're buying that garbage in the store, y'all, and it is garbage, and you taste a Cherokee tan, you will lose your ever-loving mind. She's also growing another variety out there that I can't recall.
The Cherokee tans are better also because they're like an appropriate size. How many of us, like, especially in smaller families and stuff, how many of us eat a 20-pound pumpkin in one sitting or for one meal or something like that? The Cherokee tans are cool because you can, like, calculate it like, okay, a pumpkin per person, because they're kind of smaller. They're, like, smaller than your head for sure. Maybe the size of both fists and stuff like that. But, yeah, the Cherokee tans, they're just more appropriately sized.
Yeah, but think about all these things out there where, you know, if it's local – and if it's in season, unless it's fermented, that's the only exception, rather. If it's local, I'm eating it. And whatever I can't get, I pick up at the farmer's market or whatever we don't have, I'll go there. Folks, I'll try to eat as many colors as I possibly can, especially for those reasons as described in that article. All right. So the next one here, Israeli army officials accuse Netanyahu of seeking to escalate conflicts to delay elections. Report says, now, why is that good news? Because hopefully his own people are finally starting to turn on him. Everybody wants to put Israel under one giant hat. It's just like the United States of amnesia. Most of us are not at all in line with this. Now, over there, I don't know where they are in that continuum. I don't watch it that closely. But this is exactly what a lot of people have suspected forever and a day, that if this war ever ends, then now all of a sudden Netanyahu's going to go on trial, which he was supposed to do a while back. Lo and behold, some false flag happens over there. They blame it on the Gazans. There's a whole lot of stinky stuff going on there. But reason I'm calling this good news is that I hope the pressure of what's going on there have these people turn on him. And, you know, that's the only way they're going to survive this thing. Because right now, I am so sick and tired of what I'm seeing happen over there. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, it's not my backyard. Yeah, that's the problem with it. Your government, mine too, but I don't claim them. But anyway, this government is responsible for making all this happen. Yeah, they're the ones pulling the trigger, but we're providing the guns, if you know what I'm talking about.
I think you brought up a good point, though, too. Keep in mind, like, most people aren't in line with their government. So maybe that should give you more of a pause to, like, be super enthusiastic to go to war with another country, considering a lot of people who aren't down for what's going on are probably going to die in the process. And the people who are responsible for what's going on probably aren't going to die in the process. So,
yeah, that's exactly the way it's always been. Young men die for old men's wars. And it's always been that way. And I'm hoping, because they're floating out the draft, which it wouldn't shock me to have another 9/11 and all of a sudden, oh, we got to go to war and all these Trump tards are going to be the first ones lining up. In fact, I said it before, it didn't make me a very popular person, but since when do I care about that? Mark my words, if we have boots on the ground somewhere and it's in defense of Israel, you're going to find these Trump tards, these gold star mothers, I promise you, will brag about the fact that their child was murdered over there dying for Israel. I guarantee it. And by the way, this ain't the Israel from the Bible, ain't even close. These people don't have any genetic history. It's one of the biggest frauds ever. Yeah, this was brought around by a whole lot of interest that I'm not going to get into right now. I've talked about it before. So the last one here is higher protein meals lower blood sugar regardless of the source. Bottom line is, I'm bringing this article up because I'm kind of leaning back to what I do in my own life. And I've noticed a difference by doing this. If I have any carbs, I might eat twice a day. Some days I eat three times a day. It might be a snack. I really need to try to eat more. But anyway, my last meal, what I try to do, if I'm going to have any carbs during the day, I try to have it at breakfast or lunch. And then at dinner, it'll be primarily vegetables. Like tonight, for example, I'll have a microgreen salad along with a bunch of other stuff in there as well. And I mean, this stuff, man, I got everything in there, fermented garlic, you name it. It's all in this salad. And then I have some salmon that I put in there. Now, according to Dr. Jack Cruz, you want to be trying to get as much DHA as you can. And you're going to get that from fish oil, and stuff like that. So I tried, and I've noticed a big difference that when I don't have carbs at night, I find out that I sleep a whole lot better. And particularly when I have fish at night, I seem to sleep even better. So that's exactly what I do. So tonight it's salmon, you know, another night or two during this week, I'll have herring or something like that. It might come out of a can. I'll have maybe some more salmon, and it makes all the difference in the world. But honestly, I just think that I'm way more chill, and I think I actually sleep light years better when I do that. So I wanted to bring that article up. It's a little hack that I think I haven't done enough research on it yet in terms of myself, but I think I notice a massive difference when I do that, when I have very little carbs at night. And that's actually what Jack Cruz recommends. So
you're going to have to. On the fish note, you're going to have to take your granddaughter out trout fishing sometime. We just got her a Paw Patrol. We were in Walmart, of all places, and she saw this Paw Patrol fishing pole. She didn't even watch Paw Patrol. She just likes the fact that there's puppies on it. and saw this Paw Patrol fishing pole, and we ended up getting it. So you have to take your trout fishing.
I'm going to take my little grandbaby trout fishing, and she's going to catch it on her little Snoopy pole, which is Paw Patrol.
Basically the same thing.
Can't wait for that. All right, y'all. So we're going to take a little pit stop here and go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, you down with PDC? You know me. The PDC, or Permaculture Design Certificate course, is the foundation of the permaculture system. The decentralized nature has allowed it to spread far and wide, but it is also why there is a large variation in quality of instruction. As Jeff Lawton says, the students will eventually filter out bad teachers. And once you're certified, you can teach straight away, but most thinking individuals would want to get experience in the field first. After I took my PDC, I couldn't get to Australia fast enough. The recurring theme in my head during my course was, I don't know how to do any of this. We see permaculture as a specialty education, but it should be taught starting in grade school. The complexity and the details can be added each year, but by high school, we should be producing fully capable permaculture designers, and every school should be a working permaculture demonstration site for the community. It's comically tragic how simple it is to create communities of abundance, yet we are ruled by psychopaths who seek power and dominion over others. Now, with all the videos and info online, you might wonder, is there a reason to take a permaculture design course these days? For my money, there's just something magical that happens when you go through a properly structured design course that can't be replicated by random series of videos. Bill Mollison was a master strategist, and the structure of the PDC bears this out. And as Jeff Lawton also says, you just become terminally infected, and you will never see the world the same way. There are as many variations in quality as there are teachers, so it is unfortunately up to the student to determine credibility. There are online and in-person versions. There's everything to fit your schedule and budget. If you are serious about becoming a designer, there is no better education on the planet than Jeff Lawton's online PDC. But if you're just interested in the education and or certification, there are many other options, some at an incredible value. We are actually launching our first PDC here in the Sacramento area, and we still have a few spots open. We are running a part-time version that will be one weekend a month for 6 months, and that starts September 12th. So if you are interested or know somebody locally looking for a good quality class at a very affordable price, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, man. I'm telling you, boy, like every other time, he knocks it out of the park, and I fully agree with him. There's something very magical about doing a PDC in person. You get to know some of the other folks out there on the break. There's just, I mean, the online thing, yeah, Jeff Lawton's course is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. It is probably, he's probably the best teacher in the world. But I'm going to tell you that there are other options out there. And I think you ought to get at least two PDCs. I think you should get it from two different instructors. You're going to see the world. And like Eric said, you're never going to see it again. I remember driving back from Dallas, because when I was doing mine, I was driving 2.5 hours to get there. And it was one weekend a month. And I loved how that was structured, because it gave me time to digest what I had just learned. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And frankly, that's where I met Eric. And then later on did Jeff Lawton's course. And you're just blown away, because all the stuff that you might have forgotten, because there's so much, it's like drinking from a fire hose in a good way. And I don't know why that's not in the homeschool curricula of so many people out there. You know, I would absolutely put that in there. What do you think, son?
Oh, absolutely. And I can help you guys try to figure out like a good PDC. There's a couple of rules you can follow when looking for a permaculture design course, whether it be in person or online. If it's at a university, run. 9 times out of 10, it's the exact thing that Bill Mollison was trying to avoid with it being at a college. So keep that in mind. That being said, there might be a good one somewhere. I heard the one in Oregon, the Oregon State University PDC, was actually decent. So maybe check that out. And I think that one's also free. So it's not like you're investing a whole lot other than your time. Also ask the teacher about the three ethics, or they might have the three ethics posted somewhere. And if it's Earth Care, People Care, and Fair Share, run. If it's Earth Care, People Care, and Return the Surplus to the First Two Ethics, or a variation of what I just said, you're generally going to be good to go. And then also look at, it kind of depends on what your experience is. Like if you're looking to become a consultant, then yeah, you should probably invest a little bit more into a permaculture design course like Jeff Lawton's. If you're just trying to apply this to your own farm, then you can go to like one of the free ones on YouTube, or I have a cheap one on Patreon. I mean, it's not cheap. There's a couple of different options on what you want to do, and it's at your own pace. There's a bunch of different options. Just keep in mind, the three ethics of permaculture is a big one, and whether or not it's at a university is also another big one. But it's funny that he was talking about it being established at elementary schools and stuff, because on the way to the park today, me and my 2.5-year-old, almost 3-year-old daughter were talking about photosynthesis and why trees' leaves are green and stuff like that. So that was a fun conversation. I almost kicked myself today. I almost said, we'll talk about it when you're a little bit older. And then I wanted to like punch myself right then and there, just thinking of making that statement, because I was like, well, no, she can understand this now. There's no reason she can't understand this now. I can explain this in a way where she can understand it right now. And that's, she understands. She now knows the fertility cycle, really. She knows the fertility cycle between the sun hitting the leaves of a tree. Tree shoots down exudates, and in exchange, it gets minerals and nutrients and things like that from the soil. And she understands that, all because she was wondering why trees' leaves are green. So there we go.
Yeah, I think the world would be in a lot better place if this was seriously. And then Nancy, actually, she hit it out of the park with that comment. She says, Billy, we can't get schools to include shop class anymore. I mean, that is mic drop as it possibly gets right there, because I think that's a massive mistake. I loved, in junior high, I loved shop class, but I didn't take them in high school because shop class was considered for the dummies. That's how the teachers presented it. Yeah. And like a dummy, I believed them. And only to find out, here I am, a craftsman, you know, years later. The teachers out there, folks, they are doing, most of them are doing a massive disservice by steering people away from trades and stuff like that. Because I guarantee you, most people that are getting out of high school and going into a trade, they're making light years more money and incurring no debt than the people that are going into college for a degree in worthlessness. And that's exactly how it usually works out. Trust me, I got a military education, a trade education, a college education, and a farm education. And the only one that didn't put money in my pocket was that college education. And that's two different degrees. And the same with my wife. So You, what they're telling you is the polar opposite of everything that should be told to you. So
on the topic of the college education, real quick, you got a degree in business, right?
Yeah. Associates in science and then one in business. Yeah.
Did you learn more from that, the degree in business, than a 2-hour conversation with John Willis?
I learned more from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and I learned more from podcasts, people like, exactly, John Willis, learned so much more from him, learned from people like Ed Milet, all these others, and there's a lot of it that's mindset training as well. So there is so much out there. This is exactly what Mike Adams actually was talking in this podcast today, that people are spending a fortune for college in an education that you could get using AI. It is insane. It is absolutely insane. What, like, you know, Mars Hill University over here next to me, when I was paying for a gym membership over there, I would ask the kids whenever the opportunity would arise, you know, hey, what's your major? By and large, every last one of them were going into things like sports psychology. And I'm like, what do you do with that? What do you possibly do with that? Now, the ones going into nursing, sadly, they're probably going to have a very, you know, a profitable career, depending on what they're putting out for this education. But I'm here to tell you, there's a whole lot of people out there. This is why I did that front porch talk a while ago, talking about Mike Rowe. Man, you could be out here operating heavy equipment, making real nice money, sitting in an air-conditioned cab, and people are not even given that option. You know, shop class, if I had to do over again, man, there's so, I would have taken shop class over some of the other things that I did, Because like you said, son, I mean, the School of Hard Knocks is definitely a better teacher than anything that they're going to have. And I'm glad you pointed out, don't ever take a PDC at a university, because they're going to whitewash it. They're going to water it down. And in fact, if you take a PDC around here, even where I live near Asheville, you're going to find out the very same thing, that these lunatic lefties are going to get in there and teach you a bunch of garbage instead of just reading what's in the doggone manual.
Or witches. Witches are very popular in permaculture too, so keep that in mind.
Well, yeah, it was funny because there was a girl I had on this program a while back. I'm glad you brought that up. She was having a PDC. I had no idea, and it was one of the listeners out there said, hey, you might want to double check this girl. She never said anything about being a freaking witch. And then sure enough, she knew, but didn't bother telling me.
No, she knew not to tell you is what I'm saying. She knew not to tell you.
Yeah, well, found that out. And so I'm really careful these days about who I'm going to recommend. All right, so let's just jump right into it. Before we do, remember EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Your number one threat isn't necessarily an EMP, although these days you might be thinking a little bit differently. Your number one threat is always going to be lightning. Well, if you use this thing on your house, it's going to cover EMP and lightning. But anyway, if anything gets downstream of it, they're going to cover you for 25 Gs. Find me another product out there that's going to cover you like that. That's how well EMP Shield works. Anyway, $50 off with promo code PERMA. All right. I want to talk about this one in a big way, going right back to that farmer's thing. You know, stop buying your fertility. Your farm already is making it. Now, I did an interview with Mike Adams last week. I think it's going to air this week sometime. And this is why I wanted to talk about this, because so many farmers out there, so many people that are gardeners, you go to the store to go buy your fertility, and I think you're making a profound mistake. Because, son, before I kick this off, when they buy this Miracle-Gro and they put it in their garden, why don't you tell them what's actually happening out there?
I mean, there's a lot that's going on. The salts are killing the microbes. You're creating like a little compacted layer on the surface of your soil, which is cutting off respiration and also killing the microbes on the surface of the soil. You're also forcing the plants to uptake nutrients in a way that they don't uptake nutrients. It's you're forcing there's roots, there's feeder roots, and then there's roots that soak up water. And you're using the roots that soak up water, you're forcing them to soak up nutrients at the same time. If they want this water, then they have to take the Miracle-Gro at the same time. And it's just destroying the biology. It's not really giving bioavailable nutrients to the plant. You might have a bigger plant, but if it's less nutrient dense, or if its ability to acquire nutrients afterwards goes away, then it was all for nothing anyway. You have just basically a carbon structure filled with flavored water, and that's kind of it. So you really want to avoid. Now, if this is your first time ever growing, if you're brand new to it and you were just following basically the recipe from what you saw on YouTube, don't stress, because you didn't permanently damage anything. We're about to talk about like some alternatives that you can do other than buying your Miracle-Gro. But your Miracle-Gro, it's like a loop that a lot of commercial farmers get stuck on. And now, granted, they're not using straight up like Miracle-Gro. They're using whatever variation was calculated for their property. But once you start doing it, and once you get on that cycle of constantly doing it, you're kind of stuck on that cycle without just to maintain production, to keep those payments, keep paying those payments that you have on all the equipment and stuff like that. And depending on who they're insured by, they might have to use a certain amount, or if their field looks a certain way, they're no longer insured, things like that. So keep those in mind. For example, like if they don't cultivate between some insurance companies, if they don't cultivate between like rows of corn and leave the weeds to maintain like a living mulch, then they won't be insured anymore on that crop. So keep that in mind.
It's a sickening system, but I'm even talking about on the local level, on the small level, the personal gardener, the same things apply. You don't need that stuff, and it's only going to, and the cost of it is going through the roof, because most of the nitrogen-based fertilizers are derived through the Haber-Bosch process. Well, you got a lot of those choke points that are being cut off or are cut off right now with these wars that we have, you know, going throughout the world. Ukraine was one of them. That's where, you know, a third of our stuff came from. Of course, we get a lot out of Canada, but also you don't have to be mixed up in any of that stuff. So right off the bat, I'm going to say manure is an asset. even your own if you know how to manage it. There is a thing called Humanor. You can manage that stuff. There was a time where we lived, you know, where we had a composting toilet where I could take all the urine out of there. We got to do something with it. Well, there's a whole variety. I'll come to that hopefully in a minute if William doesn't jump it, but I'm just talking about manure. It's not a waste product. You know, your chickens, sheep, cattle, pigs, they're all mobile fertility factories. It all comes down to whether or not you're managing them properly. Most people are letting their stuff, they just let them go out there. They don't move them, or they move them once a week and they think they're being effective by doing that. That's not the way you should do it. And that's not the way nature does it. So, you know, you could be putting that carbon and biology back into production. But I would also caution you too, make sure you have animals. If they're in that field, if you're worming them all the time, you're going to be killing your top predator in the soil if you're giving them dewormer. So you want to make sure your management practices are on point. And the ones that can't pass the mustard, you need to put them in the freezer. You can't be friends with your animals. So I'll kick it over to you. So manure is my number one.
And if you are worming, or if you do have to worm, try to do it in like an area where you, like a sequestered area, like a sacrificial plot or something like that, because you are going to be killing the top predators. The next one I have is I try to include like areas on your property they're going to naturally collect, you know, some fertility. That's not my full list, but some of these are that. So the edges on your property, your fence lines, where your pasture meets the forest. The edges on your property where two or more immediate interact, that point at which they interact, the edges, those are going to naturally collect fertility. So let's think of the fence line. On my fence line in the backyard, I have sweet potatoes, and I have, I believe, some watermelons or pumpkins, one or the other. I think they're watermelons. I have those growing along the side of my fence line. That's doing two things. A, once leaves start falling, and there is already leaves over there, it's going to naturally collect mulch, because fence lines with the edge effect, it's going to naturally collect leaves. As soon as the leaves start falling, which the elm tree leaves have already started falling, and the wind blows, it's going to blow up against that fence. It's acting as a net, and it's going to collect fertility in that way. Also, birds are going to come over to that fence, and they're going to perch along the fence. They do that all the time. They're going to poop on that on those leaves. That nitrogen, high nitrogen, is going to interact with my high carbon, and it's going to slowly break down over time, slowly providing the food that my microbes are going to need along those fence lines. So most people avoid the fence lines or keep a gap off their fence lines between what they grow and the actual fence line. I'm arguing maybe you should do the opposite. Grow up against the fence line, because it's going to be passively fertilized. It's going to be passively taken care of. Also, it gives you another... in this case, gives you another dimension to grow in, you know, vertical. And you can passively fertilize your crops that way. For example, like the sweet potatoes and the watermelons have not been fertilized in any kind of way. I didn't even add compost extract or compost or anything like that. I kind of wanted to see what that soil would do by itself. The only thing that it gets from me is occasional water. And I just found out today that the water that I had set up back there ain't even reaching the sweet potatoes, and they're still doing pretty fantastic. So, yeah. Mine is the edges on your property and fence lines. Those are going to collect fertility.
Great ideas. My next one's going to be one I've talked about quite a bit, and it's urine. It might be one of the most valuable overlooked resources on a farm, and nobody ever thinks about it. I keep talking about doing this video where I, you know, take all the ways in which urine can be very, very, very useful. I prefer to use it mostly in the compost pile, and looking at the work of Dr. Ed Group. And most farmers probably don't even know about this, but there's an other world of science out there that most people are not going to talk about it. And when you pee, or when you capture your urine, as I do, and you got to be careful about it too, you might not want to stick it in hot weather, or it's going to wind up turning into ammonia. So I refrigerate mine, and I use it for a whole bunch of things. So aged urine also has a lot of good medicinal uses. I'm not really talking about that right now, but in your compost pile, it is a fantastic thing, because what's happening, if it needs nitrogen out there, even when it doesn't, I'll still add it from time to time, because it is a piece of me that's going into that pile. And the microbes in that pile, all the way down to the archaea, are, believe it or not, according to Dr. Group, and I tend to think he's right on this, is that they are absolutely positively going to structure your compost in such a way that benefits you. There's also ways to use it like in a watering can or something like that, where you're able to take that urine, you know, you're going to want to make sure you got good water in there, but you know, you got to be careful too. So you might want to look at some recipes on how to go about that. Should you let somebody with medication pee on your compost? I don't think it's going to make a difference. The truth of it is, even if they're on those medications, I think a lot of the toxins are going to be tied up in so many different ways. The good thing is that at the end of the day, if you have a really, really solid pile out there, it should be handling all the waste and tying them up. So you shouldn't really have to worry about that a whole lot.
I think the only concern that people had was the SRIs or SSRIs, the serotonin reuptake things, ones. I think that's where the concern was. Now, I don't know, but I would err on the side of dad for sure.
Yeah, I would think a lot of that would be tied up. I haven't done the research on that, but honestly, I'm not using anything but, you know, vitamins and what's in my soil out here. So personally, I'm not concerned about that. But also, if you're on those things, you should be trying, as Dr. Ben or pharmacist Ben Fuchs often talks about, if you're on any kind of medications, it should be a bridge until you find a way to get off of them. So that's where I'm at. Anyway, urine is number two. Honestly, I need to get that video done and talk about all the different uses out there.
My number two is going to be, like, if you have any kind of body of water, at the bottom of that body of water is going to be a collection of anaerobic, basically broken down nutrients that are ready to be applied to the soil as long as they get turned aerobic first. So anytime you dredge your pond or even at the bottom of a swale, I mean, the swales at the demonstration site, you can't even see bare soil. In fact, you wouldn't even know where the mulch ends and the soil begins in those swales because it's so many years of breaking down and things like that. But if I were to dredge the bottom of that, that would be really, really good. Like fertility that I could add to my garden, or I could add to like larger scale crops or even pastures. The key though is that right now it's anaerobic, which means it's lacking oxygen. The key is to make it aerobic first. Make sure you have, like, you've populated the area with a bunch of good guys. That way you know it's going to be beneficial to whatever you're applying it to. I know there's a lot of like anaerobic teas and the Jadam, the Korean natural farming and stuff like that. I'm not saying that those things don't work, but it's something you have to do year after year after year. We're trying to remove ourselves from the fertility cycle because, frankly, it's just not our job. Our job is to steward the system and make sure that cycle can actually function. But fertility itself should be something we should be able to remove ourselves from once we've achieved it, a certain levels on our property. And this is one of the ways you could do it. So if you have a pond, you could dredge it, depending on how old it is. You could dredge it, make it aerobic, and then apply it. If you even have swales, if you're near a creek, you could even go to like the edges of the creek and still get some sort of dredgeable material, depending on how fast moving it is and things like that. But if it's ever flowed or jumped the bank, you notice that there's like debris fields caught up against the trees and things like that. That would be a good place to go get. That one's probably going to be aerobic if it's not underwater, but that would be a good place to get material as well. On to you, Dad.
Yeah, compost. I mean, obviously, I can't believe you haven't already brought it up, but compost in and of itself, folks, if you got that right, everything else kind of falls into place. That is pretty much all I'm ever going to use at this point. I mean, there might be some amendments or some things out there that I might try, but by and large, if your compost is on point, everything else can be on point, but you want to learn how to make some compost, which is why we've done a lot of content on that very thing out there. So, I mean, you got your manure. Let's say, for example, you're able to collect it from this is where DEI actually works, is in a compost pile. I mean that. You want as many different manure sources, clean ones, if you can find them. Obviously, the bedding on those animals, that can be multi-purposed. I mean, absolutely used in there in your compost pile. Spoiled hay, I mean, you know, you got food scraps, crop residue, all these different things can be absolutely positively used in that compost pile, and then creating the fertility for you to never, ever, ever have to go back and buy this stuff. In fact, you shouldn't be buying it now. You don't need it. That's the bottom line. I mean, those victory gardens, y'all, what were they using? They didn't have this stuff you have now. They were making incredible gardens just from compost.
Now, I will make the argument as far as fertility, it depends. I would argue if you're buying like the Kyber Bosch produced nitrogen-based fertilizers or any of those types of salt-based fertilizers, then yeah, don't buy it for sure. But if you're buying fertility in the form of like hay, doing the Greg Judy route, then I would say, yeah, as long as you're treating that as like an investment, like you're making these purchases now with the intent of getting off of these purchases in the future, I would say buying fertility that way, probably a good idea. But my next one is going to be like mobile animal systems. Mobile animal systems with a long rest period, because it doesn't make any, it doesn't make a difference if you have a mobile animal system, but they hit the same spot every 2 weeks. That's not going to be beneficial, and that's not going to produce fertility on your property. But if you can use mobile animal systems, all your animals are moving the way they would be in nature, all your animals are moving, and they're giving the land a long rest period, that's going to increase and provide fertility to your property. The animals are going to come through. They're going to stimulate growth by eating part of the grass. They're going to poop in the area. Then the chickens can come through and scratch up the poop and spread it around, or just over time, the manure itself will kind of get spread around through microbes and things like that. But that is providing fertility, that the system itself, the method itself, the technique is providing fertility on your property. Because you could have 10 cows on a piece of property and them being like a detriment to the property, or you could have 10 cows on a piece of property and they're building the forage quality and the fertility of the property, all depending upon the system that you're using them in. So.
Yeah, my next one's going to be just straight up wood chips. You know, you got that video from Paul Gauci. I think it was the Back to Eden Garden thing. There was a few things left out there, but by and large, like William said, we want to throw in the fertility and then get to a point where we don't really have to, we can kind of write ourselves out of the equation. And depending on what it is you're doing, like in our orchard systems and things like that, good night, man. Wood chips, I can't even, we got soil down there around some of these trees that's so incredibly punchy. I could put a foot worth of wood chips down there and it's ground level in months. And yeah. I'm using aged wood chips. I know a lot of people aren't, but still to take wood chips and for those to be transformed in the soil is absolutely astonishing. So yeah, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on there, but it, in so many different ways, like in our food forest down there, it's completely on autopilot at this point. It is highly fungal dominant. And this thing really requires, now I need to go out there and do some pruning on the aisles and stuff like that. But everything we put in there, when it was low, you know, we were able to grow some strawberries out there. Now that it's getting a little bit grown up, okay, strawberries aren't necessarily going to work out there, but other things are. Things I didn't expect to be blowing it up. And right now, those wood chips are really, really the number one way to go about it. Requires very little maintenance. You know, when it rains too much, those wood chips, when they're broken down, it captures all of it. When it doesn't rain enough, well, they provide it. It all works out. So wood chips, in a big, big way, can turn your stuff really on another level, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
Real quick, I did want to show this comment real quick. Closed Circuit said, that Blackbird guy is a crook, man. Race grifter alert, which the main thing I wanted to point out there was the term race grifter. I've never heard that before, but that perfectly applies to that dude right there, race grifter. My next one is going to be, speaking of food forest, chop and drop. There's no reason, let's scale it down to like a small garden, or let's say you're growing tomatoes in your garden. I have tomatoes out in my garden right now. There's no reason my tomatoes this year can't provide the fertility for my tomatoes next year, meaning I'm only going to eat of the biomass of that plant. I'm only going to eat like 10% of the biomass from that plant, the red fruit from that plant. The rest of the stalk, the leaves and stuff like that, that's not edible to me. And if it is, I'm not aware of how. And so what I can do is take that stalk after it's done producing, take that stalk, chop it down, and let it decompose on the ground. The finer I chop it, the faster it's going to decompose. And might be the easier to work with depending on what you're going to plant next after that. But as it decomposes, as it provides food for the microbes in the soil and covers the soil at the same time, it's going to provide fertility for my tomatoes next year. It's providing food for the microbes that are going to provide fertility for the tomatoes next year. It's not directly, but it's an indirect fertility, download for the tomatoes next year. So keep that in mind. Your crop could potentially provide the fertility for the same crop next year. Sweet potatoes are another good one. If you're not eating the vines and the leaves, there's a lot of biomass that comes off of sweet potatoes. And I would say the volume is probably like 60-40, probably 60, or volume, it might be higher than that, like 70-30. 70% of being something that most people don't even eat. You can turn that into fertility. You can use it in compost, turn it into fertility that way, or you can let it chop and drop right on the ground, whatever you want to do, but it can provide the fertility for your sweet potato crop next year. On to you, Dan.
I'm all about that, man. I mean, as far as, man, people don't believe me when I say I don't weed. I really don't weed. I mean, it's stuff like that where I'm like, and then honestly, with some of the things that I've been learning as of late, and I hope to, you know, from like people like John Kemp and some of the others, I'm realizing, and I have actually, before I even heard John Kemp talk about it, I was already employing, like I was talking earlier with the microgreens in between the aisles, that if you can get a bunch of different families in there, then all of a sudden there's an incredible amount of cooperation that's all happening at the same time. So yeah, I'm a big believer of that. Also, I'm going to say my last one's going to be turning somebody else's waste problems into your fertility. I mean, this is why Greg Judy doesn't hay his own property. If he's going to use hay, he's going to bring it in from somewhere else, from a place that's reliable. Put that fertility on your own problem, on your own property. I'm a big, big fan of that. And I was talking about it a moment ago with the wood chips. But it could be something. It could be businesses. You know, you got coffee grounds out there. We got brewery, you know, stuff coming off that brewery thing. Feed a whole lot of animals with that. And, of course, take their fertility out of the back end and put it to work for you. Spoiled produce. So many different ways you can go about using that, either directly into your compost pile or into your pigs or chickens. You know, restaurant scraps. I think I blew Mike Adams' mind when I was talking about how we actually do that. I was talking about how one trip to Chipotle was enough to feed 6 pigs and 100 chickens for a week. And that's just, and that's non-GMO food. It's better than anything you could hope to buy, and it's free. I mean, notwithstanding the amount of, you know, travel you had to go to get there, but I'm going to be smart about this and bundle it into another trip that I had going anyway. So there's so many different ways you can go about this in so many different ways where you can take all of that fertility and be, you could take somebody else's problem, turn it into your solution. Another thing I talked about were the Asian grocery stores around here. They got to pay a dumpster guy to come out twice a week. Well, you taking stuff that doesn't necessarily have to hit that dumpster could provide that fertility for you and provide a blessing to them, because instead of going twice a week, now it's only once a week. So there's so many different ways you can go about this. All right, son, that's my last one there. What do you got?
My last one is leaf mold from forest floor. Of all the soil tests that I've done, everybody across the board, very few people, there's only been, I think, 2 tests where people were lacking bacteria. And one of them was right after doing the Silo Sharp experiment. Everybody's generally good on bacteria. What everybody across the board is lacking is fungi. That's across the board. I haven't done a single soil test, not a compost test, but a single soil test where somebody's fungal content was squared away for what they were trying to grow on that particular piece of area. So what you can do is go into an older forest and start kicking over like leaves that have been there for a long time. You should see thick white strands underneath. And if you do see those, then collect those. Or even if you see like some different colored strands or different size strands of like a fungal network, then collect those, bring them back and make compost out of them, or add them to your compost, or add them directly to your raised beds, whatever you want to do. There's a bunch of different ways to apply it to your soil, but it's very, very important to get that fungal content to your soil. It'll naturally show up, but this is a way, as long as you're doing everything correctly, it'll naturally show up eventually, or you could go get it, bring it to you properly, and immediately start inoculating it, inoculating your soils with a little bit more fungi. Now, on top of that, I also wanted to add one more thing, and you might have to buy, you might not need to, if you are in the business of buying fertility right now, you might need, or you might not have to buy as much as you have been once you sequester the fertility leaving your property. That's something else that some people don't really factor in, is that you're losing fertility anytime you have an erosion event. You're losing fertility anytime you leave the soil bare. You're losing fertility anytime. I mean, there used to be a saying amongst farmers not too long ago that they would only sell what could walk off their property with on their own will, like with their own four legs or their own two legs. They didn't sell crops. The crops stayed on the property. They sold the animals that could walk off the property on them on their own because their fertility, they left their fertility behind. The crops, if you remove the crop and then sell that, you're not leaving the fertility behind. Depending on what it is, like with the example with the tomatoes and the sweet potatoes, if you do it correctly, you could potentially leave the fertility behind. But most people aren't. Most people aren't going that route. So try to figure out, like, if you have erosion anywhere, try to sequester the erosion. If you have any bare spots, try to cover those up, things like that. And that'll help you in a way of, like, not having to produce as much fertility because now you're not losing as much fertility anymore.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to sum up everything that we're doing here, that we're saying here, look, folks, bottom line is things are getting hard. And they're going to get harder, as a lot of you well know in the sound of my voice. But before you drive to the farm store and buy another bag of what they call fertility, walk around your property. You might be standing on what you were about to pay for, in a nutshell, is what I really want to get to. And by the way, folks, before we close this out, if anybody hasn't given us a 5-star review in all these different platforms, please do. It definitely helps us to get to more people out there. Because that's exactly what we need right now. We need more people that are able, absolutely positively able, to go out here and start making a big, big difference in how they acquire their food. Because, like I said, folks, it's going to get crazy. All right, y'all. Hopefully this was a blessing to you. I want to thank everybody that caught us live. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat, feel the fire and thrive. So much green stuff.